Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Here's your money briefing for Wednesday, March 22nd. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank almost 2 weeks ago cast a spotlight on the nation's banking sector and the ability of banks to weather a stress test. It's also given people jitters about their own finances.
You're seeing these headlines, and your response may be to freak out, and your response may be, I don't care, it doesn't affect me. I don't think either of these are the right responses. Your response is to do something.
We'll talk to WSJ editor Jeff Rogo about giving your personal finance a stress test. That's after the break.
You're a growing business, and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and concerns over the health of the broader banking sector have reintroduced the idea of putting banks through a stress test to gauge their ability to operate during a hypothetical emergency. So how would you do a similar top-to-bottom checkup with your own personal finances? Jeff Rogo is a Wall Street Journal editor who works with our personal finance team, and he joins me with more. Hey, Jeff, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jeff, when we hear the term stress test as it pertains to banks, what does that usually entail?
So every year, the Federal Reserve takes the largest banks in the country and provides a disaster preparedness situation. So it looks at what if we lose X percent of jobs, what if there's freezes in the credit market, and looks at what happens in these scenarios to banks' finances, their capital ratios, their funding, how strong are they in a situation if a bunch of bad stuff happens. And at the end, they all get a grade.
All right, so why is now a good time to put your own personal finances through a similar test?
You know, for the last 2 weeks or so, everyone's kind of freaked out because one enormous bank in California has failed. Another large bank in Europe had to be bought, and a bunch of regional banks are under pressure. You're seeing these headlines, and your response may be to freak out, and your response may be, I don't care, it doesn't affect me. I don't think either of these are the right responses. Your response is to do something, and what you can do is stress test your own finances, and I think there's concrete ways that you can go about and see, am I okay if there's my own personal sort of bad situation?
So let's go through that test. A lot of people do their banking. They might have their savings, their mortgage, their car loan, even their small business finances at one institution. Wouldn't that make it easy to run their money through a test?
It's convenient as a consumer. So as a consumer, having all of your stuff in one place is really easy. It's one app. It also is probably what the bank has been telling you. You know, since the financial crisis, one of the big things banks have done is this idea of cross-selling. Let's get a customer in the door, and by doing that, we can offer them all these other products. So what that enables you to do as a customer is probably a little easier to do a stress test. But what you don't know is the health of that singular institution. And so even if on all those lines, you look great, know that you're still tied to one financial firm. There are banks that have passed stress tests and failed. If you have that much money with one institution, even if you feel really comfortable about your own finances, you are still running a risk. And so for that, all the financial advisors we talked to, even the bankers we talked to said, just don't put all your eggs in one basket. Have checking account maybe another place, have maybe a small business loan another place. And the issue we had with Silicon Valley, the reason many of these firms couldn't make payroll in Silicon Valley out in California was because they had all of their money in this one place. And it means if that one place has a problem, you can't do the simple things banks are supposed to do, which is help you run your business, help you pay your mortgage, help you do the very simple things.
So, you know, a lot of us have money coming in on a schedule, usually a paycheck, and we pay bills on a schedule also, and that can make it easier to plan. But when it comes to money, a lot of people don't like surprises.
So surprises could come around sort of at any time, as you expect. It's a surprise. And so what we talked to most of the financial advisors said, keep 3 to 6 months of dry powder, 3 to 6 months of your expenses in an account that's ready to pay. I would say this as well. The thing that happens in an emergency is you're not also thinking about the mental toll it's going to take on you. And so having it in complicated places can be even more difficult. And so having 3 to 6 months in money where you're not having to move it around, you're not going to have to make a whole bunch of decisions. If something really happens to you, your partner, yourself, you're going to want to know where that capital is, and you're not going to want to have to make 40 different changes to get that money.
You know, in a lot of cases, the FDIC will protect people if something happens to their money that's held at a bank. But how about running your money through a test to be sure you're getting an ideal return on your holdings? Where can people start?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest thing is know what your return is. If you're in a checking account and you're getting nothing, or you're in a savings account at a bank and getting nothing, know that there are ways to improve the return on your capital. A money market savings account today at a brokerage is going to yield you over 4%. If you're getting nothing in your checking account and there's $30,000 that's sitting there doing nothing, you're just giving away money. There's other things. High yield savings accounts have been really beneficial online. We've seen a rise in people buying CDs. This is guaranteed money. This is not like putting money in the stock market where it could go up or down in 6 months. You're going to get this money back. We talk to financial advisors, and what they say over and over again, the biggest mistake people have is way too much money in their checking account. That's money that can be put to work and return. And if you are really concerned about taxes, you're saying, look, I love getting a return of 4%, but I don't want to pay heavy taxes on this. I don't want to, you know, come at the end of the year, it really drives my tax bill higher. I would really suggest municipal bonds. Bankrate has data that says the average American sticks with their primary checking and savings account for about 17 years on average. It's interesting because when we buy a home, we shop for like 30 different mortgage rates. We're trying to get the best rate. We buy a mortgage broker who goes and is like, I'm going to get half of a basis point better than this other person. So we go with them. And yet we put our checking account in and completely go on autopilot. The same rigor you might have done to get your home loan is something you should look at your bank regularly. Is your bank providing a good enough return on your savings account? What's your customer service like? If your customer service is not great, you can change banks. You are not picking a bank for life.
You know, in terms of running your money through these tests and trying to find the best opportunity, if somebody has a 401k account, how would that fit into this idea of testing to gauge the strength of their investments?
In this kind of environment, it's really important to look at what you're investing in your 401k. And I think if you cut your investments in your 401k and you cut it below your company's match, then you're making a mistake. You should do whatever it takes to get the free money that your company is providing. After that, it is discretionary money. If you need it now and you made a decision 6 months ago or a year ago to cut your investment of 401k because there were things you had to pay for, and it could be inflation. I know a lot of people, the rising cost of childcare forced them to say, you know, for a couple years, I'm going to lower my 401k so I have money to pay for a $2,000 a month childcare for my second kid or whatever it is. A lot of people made that decision. That is not a decision that should be made forever. And little changes to your 401k can go a big way. Let's say you cut it down to 6%. Can you afford 7? We're not saying you need to go back to the 10% you had before kids, but maybe just add a percent. If you can do it, it's going to be beneficial. You'll thank yourself in your 60s. And I think that now you sort of have to reevaluate how comfortable are you with your job, how comfortable you are with inflation. And if you say you're doing a little bit better and you're feeling like you're saving a little money, I might think about if you cut down to the bone, maybe add a little bit more meat. Maybe go, just again, you don't have to go all the way to 10. 7% can make a big difference. And I think we're starting to see some people do that.
All right, that's the Wall Street Journal's Jeff Rogo with us. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.